What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Around the World. I'm your host, Anthony Dragasis, and I'm here with my co-host, Dylan. And we are very excited to bring you episode 4 today, featuring a very special guest, one with a very unique soccer journey, Chris Donovan. So Chris was a Conestoga High School grad, Gatorade Player of the Year in 2018, first team All-State, All-American his senior year, then moved on to Drexel University, where he made his mark, scoring 30 goals in his career. His final season, named CAA Player of the Year and Philly Soccer 6 Player of the Year. And then right after that, was drafted by the Columbus Crew, 68th overall, signed his first pro contract at Philly Union 2. And actually, this past Friday, June 17th, Chris signed for the first team at Philly Union and made his debut the next day, which is a pretty awesome thing. So thanks, Chris, for joining. How are you doing?
Doing great. Happy to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. We're excited to delve in. But before we get into anything soccer, one of my biggest memories with Chris is so me and Chris played for Westchester last summer in the USL2 together, and we had a really good run last summer. We made it to the regional final in the playoffs. And one of the most hilarious memories that I think we share is, so we unfortunately lost in the regional final. And I'm not going to confirm nor deny what happened that night. But there may or may not have been alcohol involved. And the next morning, the bus was slated to leave. We were in Georgia, so we had a very long drive ahead, and the bus was slated to leave. I think it was like 8:15 a.m. And all of us were just down in the lobby waiting. And we're just waiting for our coaches to come down. Like, where the hell are these guys? Like, they aren't showing up. And so Chris took it upon himself to go up to the room. And if you want to take over now for what happened next.
Yeah, I was getting a little bit impatient just because I actually wasn't totally committed to going on this trip in the first place. But after we won in the semifinal, the coaches convinced me to make one more trip before starting to, you know, ramp up my fitness for the college season. But I made this trip, and then that morning I was really not happy with what was going on, because I just wanted to go home at that point. It was a long day the day before, and everyone made it a big point of being down in the lobby on time, and everyone really was, except for the coaches. So went upstairs, knocked on their door, and our assistant coach answered just in his boxers, and was like, "Dono, how you doing?" I'm like, "It's 8:13, and we were supposed to be down there at like 7:40 or something like that."
Yeah, something like that.
And our head coach, who was still in bed, just sat up in bed like he had just been awoken by hearing it was 8:13. Like, flies out of bed and starts rifling through the drawers where he had all his clothes. It brightened up my morning a little bit.
Yeah, that's so funny, man. Yeah, I just remember them just like coming down in shambles, just like hair a mess, like, "Let's go." "Let's get on the bus." No, it was funny, but I'm glad you made the trip, man. It was a good time. Got one memory out of it at least.
Yeah, it was a good time in the end.
Yeah, so sure. Sometimes I think it's the memories are made off the field on those kind of trips. So wasn't successful on the field, but glad you still got to have a good time that night, and then catch a coach's slipping. It's always good to have one up on the coach here and there. So you can cash that one in later. But Chris, when getting into kind of where you are right now, and congratulations on making your professional MLS debut. That's a huge deal. But obviously, everybody starts somewhere, and for you, you have a little bit of a different story than a lot of guys that are graduating to the professional ranks now. You played high school and club soccer as opposed to the DA, the MLS Next, kind of the academy movement going on in America. So can you talk to us a little bit about what went into that decision and what made you choose to take that path?
Yeah, so believe it or not, it wasn't a huge decision to be made, because at the time I wasn't necessarily a great player, and I started out playing club soccer, met my coach who I ended up keeping, sticking with throughout since I was from when I was 9 until I was 18 and left for college, and really the same group of core guys on that club team too. There were fringe players that came and left, but a solid 6-7 maybe even 8 guys stuck with us throughout that entire time too. So it was by the time that any of us really ever got into, you know, a level where we could have gone the academy route, we were playing at a high level of club soccer anyway. We were one of those club teams that we would scrimmage academy teams, and we'd hold our own. We wouldn't just be, you know, trampled. But yeah, when it came, there were those fringe players who would leave and go to academy teams. But our core group of guys, me included, we loved our coach, and we wanted to stick around until it was time that we all departed at the same time.
Yeah, man. So I can relate to that completely, because so when I switched my sophomore year from academy ball to club soccer, I joined a team that literally reminds me exactly of what you're describing. So the coach had the core group of guys from when they were, I guess, like 8 years old, kept them all through senior year of high school. And you know, I joined at a great time. It was kind of like a year switch. So we got a lot of quality players, some guys coming from academy like myself and things like that. We formed a really great team. So I can relate to that completely. And I think there's a lot of benefit, and it doesn't happen a lot anymore, where you see, you know, you having the same coach for, you know, even like 2+ years, because in an academy, I think it changes every season or every 2 seasons or something like that. So I think it's a very unique thing. And I think I benefited from being with him for 3 years after I joined. And I can only imagine for you. And I think that kind of leads into my next question. So obviously you talked on that. So you said you played at a high level of club soccer, and you also played high school. So can you talk to us about those two levels and how you think playing at those two levels helped in your development, or maybe hindered your development, or and whatnot?
Yeah, so obviously the club soccer was a high level, and that definitely it did nothing but help my development. But I just honestly, the high school soccer wasn't a high level, and the one thing that it did for all of us guys that played high school soccer was, well, first of all, that same core group of guys, most of us went to Conestoga as well from playing from our club team. So we had a very strong high school team that it wasn't really fair. The teams that we were coming up against, the kids that we were playing against were playing soccer 3 months a year, and we were playing soccer 12 months a year mm-hmm. for a quality club team. So we'd come up against teams, and our coach was very, he was all about being sportsmanlike. So some games we would play maybe 20, 30 minutes, the score's 5-0, and we're all out of the game. But the one thing that it definitely did for us was, like for me, it built my confidence, because just being able to put the ball in the net that many times, it's underrated, but it matters. So I wasn't ever really a goal scorer at the club level until I did it first in high school, and then started to add that to my game in the higher level play as well.
That's super interesting. That's really good insight. I mean, I think it's good to hear that there's a lot of different ways to kind of get to that end goal of playing in the MLS, playing professionally. But Chris, you were state champion in 2016 and the 2016-17 year. What was that run like with your buddies and obviously going all the way?
Yeah, it was great. In 2016, it was talked about even before the year. Our coach would always set a goal for the teams, and he would be extremely realistic in these goals. He wouldn't just set out at the beginning of the season to win the championship. But when he did do that for our year in 2016, he said just pretty bluntly, like, I don't normally do this, but this is the most talented group of players that I've ever coached, and it would be kind of disappointing if we did anything other than win the state championship. And then we obviously went on a good run, had some, I think, just the one loss in the district final that year, and that was very disappointing. But then ended up not having to play that same team in the state run because they lost, and then went on to win the final. And then 2017, we lost that senior group of players, but we replaced them with younger kids who were not quite as talented, but were very promising. And then our senior group then had really grown since the year before also. So we went on another run, thankfully, and ended the same way.
Yeah, man. You got two on me because I actually never won a championship in high school, but not going to get into that, but I think we had some of the most talented high school teams of all time and still never won a championship, but whatever. So no, that's awesome. Congrats, man. And it's a very interesting perspective because I think, I mean, thus far and at our age, I think a lot of, those guys that are going pro that are getting first team contracts are academy players, right? And that's just the reality of the situation, and just the numbers tell us that. And so I think it's very insightful and interesting that you have a different path and created your own path in that way. And I commend you for that because it is a little bit more difficult. And I think you made the most out of every opportunity that you had in that sense. So obviously, played club ball, played high school ball, won a couple state championships, and then moved on to Drexel after that. So can you tell us about a little bit about the recruiting to Drexel? Because obviously, I know from firsthand experience, a little bit different and more challenging, I guess, at the club playing club ball. So can you talk about your recruitment process a little bit and how that kind of worked out for you?
Yeah, so it ended up working out great because Drexel was a great fit for me. It's a whole new world being in the city, even though it's only 30 minutes away from the suburbs where I live. It was really easy to separate the two worlds, even though I could make a 30-minute drive and just be in a different place. But as far as recruiting goes, I wasn't getting a ton of looks. I had three schools that were really interested in me. The others were, so it was Drexel, Princeton, and St. John's. And Drexel was the first to make me a real offer. And I liked the offer. So I took it without allowing the others to make their offer, and it ended up working out great.
Yeah. And did the fact, so I think when we were looking it up, there's four guys from your club team, correct, that ended up at Drexel?
Yeah. So, I was the first domino to fall, of four. I committed, just before that, senior high school season. And when I committed, they were no school was truly sold on me at the time, but my club coach convinced them that I was the right way to go. And they ended up taking his word on it. And when I performed that high school season quite well, they took his word on a couple other players. And it was great that they ended up coming with me, because there's nothing like having friends going in, and they're still my friends on the way out.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I mean, it's really great. I think, you know, you make some of your best friends for life through college soccer and college sports. And the fact that you got to go in with them having gone on a previous journey, that's pretty special stuff. I can say that I'm happy you didn't go to St. John's, because I think we're good. We're good on playing you four times. So I'm pretty happy about that. But Chris, you were a standout performer basically throughout your entire college career. One of the things that stood out to me, though, was the fact that you were able to make an immediate impact. And for those that don't know, it's really hard to come in as a freshman into any college sport and be an impact player right away. I'm sure, Chris, you can speak on this, but there's just a huge change in everything, in the dynamic and in the living circumstances. Then obviously, first and foremost, in the level of play, it just goes up astronomically. But Chris, you were, you had 9 points your freshman year, I believe, and that placed you as third on the team, again, as a freshman. So super impressive. But can you talk to us about how you were able to make that transition so quickly and be so effective as a freshman?
Yeah, so hearing it, it's not something that I'm even proud of looking back on, because for the amount of minutes that I played and the amount of chances that I missed, it should have actually been a lot more than that. But, you know, the key to making an impact on the way in was the first day of training. I showed up and won the fitness test, and that immediately won the respect of my coaches. And they trusted me to start pretty much every game, play significant minutes. And just, you know, it was the right way to come in, and just working hard on the field, showing them that I was going to give them everything was my way of trying to earn my spot. And thankfully it worked out.
Yeah. I think it's a very valuable thing to bring up, Chris, because sometimes it's the little things that kind of set players apart in any environment, and the fitness test being your first impression. I remember when I came in my freshman year, I knew my dad was telling me, that's your first impression of the coaches. They're going to associate you with that score, because that's just the reality of what it is. It's your first impression. And to go out there and kill it in that way, I think it kind of takes you another step, which is awesome. And then, so one thing we wanted to touch on as well that we were interested in is, I believe, so after your sophomore season, you all had a coaching change at Drexel. So for your junior and senior seasons, you're under a new coach. So kind of what was that like going through that coaching change in the smack dab middle of your college career?
So the coaching change was, it was definitely it was something that kind of, you know, I'm not sure exactly how to say, but it kickstarted everyone's interest in playing for Drexel again. It was getting a little bit stagnant and stale under the old coaching staff, and bringing in a new coach, everyone has a fresh start, and there were guys that had never played under the old coach that now believed that they could earn a spot. So those first few months of training were really intense. Everyone's trying to earn that spot, and then COVID hits and we all get sent home. But what our coaching staff did, our new coaching staff, they gave us assignments on a daily to weekly basis on how we were going to play as a team moving forward, and just creating these like PowerPoint and video presentations, which at the time seemed so stupid, but they were really valuable for us to, we didn't even have to learn it on the field. And when we came in that junior season of mine, we all already knew what was going to be expected of us. It was tactics that were high pressing, and it was going to be high energy, and it was going to play to the strengths of the players that we had. So everyone knew what was going to be expected of them. And if you didn't perform that role that was expected of you, you simply just weren't going to play. So we ended up with having a lot of guys that were bought in to the idea. And we frankly turned around a program that was not doing very well at all.
I think that's fascinating, because coaching changes, I feel that they can go, you know, one of two ways. And obviously you guys turned it around. But I also feel that, you know, in another situation, it can lead to somewhat of an implosion. And, you know, you can lose players to the transfer portal, which is becoming more and more prevalent in college, and players can just not have faith in the new staff. So I think it's really awesome and positive that you guys were able to turn it into something that generated a lot of good for the program. And I mean, you obviously were able to have some sustained success from your junior and senior year. But one change that you personally went through, and now correct, you can mention if this was due to the new coaching staff or not, but you went from winger to striker. And obviously, you've been enjoying a lot of success at the striker positions. So, do you think that's something that contributed to your success on the field and eventually reaching your MLS debut?
Yeah. So I've always been, even since high school, just sort of a hybrid player, someone that's able to play the nine or on the wings. And where I've found the most success is in playing two striker formations, where I have that freedom to roam and play off someone else and not be fully responsible to be the central focal point at all times, but also still have that freedom to drift wide and make something happen. So thankfully, my new coach came in and said that he wanted to play a formation with two strikers. And part of the reason for that was my unique skill set. And he saw for me that I could be effective in a two striker formation. And that ended up being true. And then when I eventually came to the Union, I knew that it was going to be a similar story here, and that the Union is always going to play with two forwards. So I knew that it would be a great fit for me.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And I think it seemed like it just happened to work out under the new coaching staff, but I think you having the ability to kind of switch between the two kind of your whole life, I think helped you in that way, become more marketable and become more adaptable to that eventual change. And yeah, I think, you know, obviously it paid dividends. You killed it your junior and senior years, won a lot of personal, individual accolades. So before we get into kind of your pro career, I'm just interested in, right before, the draft and after your senior year, or maybe going back to even your junior year, I'm interested in, kind of that process of becoming a pro and it becoming a reality for you, and how you kind of dealt with that, and whether or not you went on trials or things of that nature leading up to the draft.
Yeah, so there was really nothing my junior year. Everything was standard as it was always going to be. And then heading into my senior year, I knew that I frankly needed to win the player of the year for the conference as an individual, and needed to get some type of national recognition if I was going to make the next step in my own journey. And it's unfortunate that that's how it is, but they look at who gets this recognition. And even though I normally wouldn't have necessarily cared about getting individual honors. It was something that was necessary for me to take that next step. So thankfully, we picked up the CAA Player of the Year award, and I think I was All-American, academic All-American. So got some recognition, and then my coach started telling me that I was going to be probably looked at in the draft. And he was telling me that the draft is essentially just a glorified invitation to preseason. It doesn't mean anything. And he was telling me this, essentially warning me if I were to take that chance and go wherever I was drafted, that would be forfeiting my ability to play my fifth year at Drexel. Mm-hmm. So that was where I stood before the draft, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that's super interesting, that point that you touched on, Chris, how the MLS draft is essentially an informal invitation to preseason. And we see that, you know, looking from the outside. Obviously, there's guys that get drafted super high in the first round, and you turn around and they're not playing for even that franchise. You know, a lot of those guys end up in the championship with an unassociated different team. But you were on the inside of that. So what's that like, that preseason process after you get drafted? Can you take us inside that a little bit?
Yeah, so I was drafted by the Columbus Crew, and it was in the third round. So going in, I knew that being the third round draft pick, I wasn't necessarily going to be valued that highly. And that was just the reality of it. And I was going to have to do basically what I'd always done and just work super hard and try to get noticed during the time that I was there. So I went down to Florida with the Crew, and that was just a few days after the draft. It's a very quick turnaround. So I headed down, and I wasn't performing at my best when I was there. And it was after 2 weeks or so that they let me know that they were no longer interested in looking at me as a prospect. So they sent me back to Columbus, and that was where I trained with Crew 2 for just a few days. And then at that point, Crew 2 also told me that they didn't want to sign me either. So I was sent back home to Philadelphia.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's I think this sheds light on, I appreciate you sharing that. I think this sheds light on just the cutthroat nature of what it is to be a professional sometimes. And you know, like, obviously I have no experience internally, but just hearing stories, you know, if, you know, you said it yourself, like you just weren't performing at what you felt was your highest standard at that time. And that happens to everyone. We all perform that way at times. And, you know, it's just tough because it's, as you mentioned, like, it's a glorified invitation to preseason. So you got to perform in preseason if you want that spot. And, you know, it didn't pan out for you, but with Crew at least. But you did get an opportunity eventually at the pro level at Union 2. So can you talk to us about how that kind of came to fruition? And yeah, just that process.
Yeah, so I actually had known about my opportunity with Union 2 since before the draft. So the way that it came about was Union 2 made it known that they were interested in signing me. That was before the draft, but the Union had already traded away all of their draft picks. They weren't interested in draft picks because that's just not how the Union operates. They're very academy driven. So they let me know that they weren't going to draft me. And if I was, they completely supported my decision and encouraged me to go and chase that dream of getting to an MLS team. But if it didn't work out, even if I was just sent home to play with Crew 2, then if Crew 2 had offered me a contract, I could have said no, and I could have signed for Union 2 instead. Because once the MLS, the first team of the Crew, tell me that I've been released, then you have the opportunity to sign for whatever second team that you want. So if I'm being honest, once the first team of the crew sent me home, it was 99% likely to be the Union for me, just because it's my team. I knew that it would be a style that suited me, and I didn't even have to move. I still live on Drexel's campus, so it was a great fit for me. So once I got sent home by Crew 2, I was connecting through DC. Unfortunately, it was a horrible day. It was a horrible couple days, really. Got really bogged down, and then the travel just ended up making it worse. But I was in the DC airport where I made the call back to Union 2, and they told me that they were saving a spot for me, and they still had that spot. So that's when everything really happened with Union 2, and yeah.
I think I think that's something important to discuss is the MLS draft, and maybe if we have a little bit of time later, we can talk about it. But yeah, Chris, like you said, a lot of teams aren't using the draft anymore, and as you said, they're academy oriented, and it's definitely making it tougher, I think, for college players to ascend to that professional rank. You know, with the draft losing importance and validity. And we kind of talked about in the last episode about how the 21st century model could help college soccer in that light. But the Union 2, they play in the MLS Next League, right, Chris?
Yeah, it's MLS Next Pro.
Yeah, so American soccer is very fluid right now with all the new leagues that are being conceived and some leagues are getting rid of. So can you explain quickly for our listeners and for us as well a little bit about the MLS Next Pro League, and do you think it's good for soccer in America in general?
Yeah, so I have to be honest, even on the inside of it, I'm not fully aware of all the rules and things that go into MLS Next Pro League. I know there are a lot of things that have to do with the squad, and you can't have more than 5 academy players on the field at one time because it's supposed to be a professional league, and they don't want teams just filling up their rosters with academy kids trying to get them to play at a high level. So that was the main worry of the league, and they came up with that to remedy it. And what happens is really, you have a core group of, this is how it seems at least, you have a core group of guys that are signed to second team contracts. Most teams will have a few academy guys, and then most teams will have some first team guys coming down to play with the second team to get minutes. So it's a good mix of players that all get the opportunity to play with each other and play against players of the same caliber from other teams. So I've had a great experience with it so far. I feel like it definitely helped me as a player to be getting these minutes, and it's definitely more valuable than just solely sitting the bench for a first team and just training with, let's be honest, you're training with great players, right, but you're really not getting those game minutes, and that's what's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, and I appreciate you sharing that because I had no idea about that 5 academy player rule, because obviously this is its first year, correct? This is the first year? Yeah, so it's very new and fresh, and I had no idea it even existed for a little bit, but I just thought it was under the USL championship wing. I don't know, because I feel like you can look at both sides. I think what you're explaining, how you just explained the intricacies of it, I think that's very beneficial because I don't know if the USL Championship has those restrictions, but like I don't think they did when there were MLS teams still affiliated with USL Championship, and I felt like it was a lot of academy players, you know, kind of playing in that in that space and taking away, at least at the MLS academy or teams, taking away from maybe the pros or the Union 2 contract, as you mentioned, like the contract players, which is interesting. I think that's a very good thing. But I don't know, Dil, do you have any input on just in general what it's trying to do or accomplish?
Yeah. I think it's actually really good because when Chris was explaining it a little bit, I was trying to compare it to, like, for example, a European model. And I think it actually hits home with the rule about signing academy players, because I'm just thinking about if there's a really good youth player, at a City, at a United, at a Liverpool, but they're just like, they're never going to play for the first team right at that moment. You don't see the best ones get sent back down to the youth team. You'll see the best ones get sent on loan to like a championship team. Like Jesse Lingard played for Birmingham City for a long time before he graduated to the United first team. So I think it's actually a good rule and a good system to kind of follow through on that model, where if you do have a player that you do see a first team future with, you can send him to a legitimate league, because it's not all academy guys. It is professional guys, like Chris was saying, or guys on second team contracts or whatever. And they still get a chance to get those minutes. Like Chris was saying, that's really the most important thing in your development. They get a chance to get those professional minutes at a high level, and still be, under the ownership and contract with the club. So I think it's definitely trending towards the right direction as far as player development and moving through the ranks, and I'm sure this isn't the final version, because there's been a ton of changes over the past few years, and there's some quirks to it. I think it's like 2 points if, because they don't let you tie, right? It's a penalty shootout after in the MLS Next Pro League. If you tie, they take you to penalty shootout. You get 2 points if you win. So it's quirky, but I think that's pretty fun too. But overall, I think the goal, if you're looking at the goal of it, and Chris, you're on the inside, you know way more than I do. But it's probably to eventually get guys to a first team level. So in that light, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, the main goal of MLS Next Pro, more so than the USL, is they want players that are going to play in the MLS in the future to be playing in those games. So they don't want the USL level players that are 28, 29, even 30 years old playing in these games. But it is possible to be playing against someone of that age that's just coming down from the first team. But in that case, you know that you're playing against an MLS level player. So they're really just trying to cut out the older, lower level players in a sense.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great mission. I actually didn't even know, like I said, I didn't really know the intricacies. So I was really interested to hear what you had to say about it, but no, I think that's very beneficial. And as Dylan was mentioning, like, I think it's a trend in the right direction for American soccer. And really putting an emphasis on the second tier, I guess, having a platform to perform and then move to the first team is so important. And I think that's what this is doing a better job than the USL has ever done, which sounds good. So I'm interested to see where it goes the next few years. But thanks, yeah, Chris, for giving us some insight.
I wish that they would just allow promotion relegation in America. I mean, that would change everything. That would change everything, because I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but but owners of American soccer clubs, these clubs are fluid investments. I understand you might lose money if you buy an MLS team and they get relegated, but you can also make money if you buy a championship team and they get promoted. That would just make that player learning system even so much more easier. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah, I agree though. I'm definitely in your corner on that, but that's a whole nother discussion, as you mentioned. And I want to really get into Chris's, this is the most exciting part. So I really want to get into this part. So Dono, I'm kind of just interested. So obviously I mentioned in the beginning, and we talked about, you signing with Union 2, and then literally this past week, you signing your first team contract and making your debut. So I'm curious as to if you could shed some light on the process of that a little bit, but more importantly, like, what was it like kind of stepping on onto the field of an MLS game and making your pro debut?
Yeah, so the process was, everything was just very expedited because this week we were kind of in a bind having four guys out on U20 international duty. The first team was going to struggle to field a full bench. So, and also having Sergio Santos out, trying to renew his green card or visa. I'm not sure the exact situation, but so he's also out. And they were kind of in need of a second forward, and I'd been performing with the second team. So I came in on Tuesday of last week, and Ernst Tanner, the sporting director, he was there at our breakfast for Union 2, which is definitely not normal. So he was there and just saying hi to everyone. And he came up to me and asked if I had 5 minutes. Took me into an office in the stadium and basically told me that they were interested in signing me to a first team contract. He went on a 5 minute speech about what this would mean. I admittedly wasn't taking in a ton of that information because I was kind of just, you know, I was amazed that it was happening so quickly, but I actually didn't even know, because whether I didn't hear exactly what he said or if he didn't lay out the time frame, I assumed that he meant that was going to be upon the expiry of my current contract, which would last until December, which is the end of the MLS Next Pro season and MLS season. So because when I first signed for Union 2, they made it clear that this year was going to be my chance to prove that I belonged in the first team. But it was extremely unlikely that I would play for the Philadelphia Union in this season, just because it wasn't something that they planned on the way in. And it's just something that ended up happening. But on Tuesday, I was told that. On Thursday, I was sent the contract. I signed my portion, and then the Union and MLS signed their portions on Friday in the morning. And then I was announced Friday in the afternoon. And then on Saturday, I was rostered and getting into a game in the 85th minute. And it was really special. I didn't even expect to be subbed in. I was under the impression that I was going to be on the bench to fill the bench. And then before the game, all the guys that I've known for the past couple of weeks of training with them, they came up to me, told me to be ready. They had a feeling that I was going to be going into the game, and they ended up being right. Got called. We were warming up in the second half, and when I see coach go to the bench and point to the guy who comes down the line and tells us who's coming into the game, and it was me. It was a pretty special feeling.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing, Chris, and congrats again. There's really nothing like a dream being realized. I mean, I can imagine, and you've probably had so much to take in over these past few days. I can't even imagine what it's been like. What are some of the coolest things you would have to share from the past few days and that experience?
It's really cool to be, you're on the field, and even though it was a disappointing result, we tied 1-1. At the final whistle, I knew that, my friends were there and they'd bought tickets, even though it was a near sold out crowd. They were able to get tickets. One of my friends worked their magic online and got tickets, even though it was supposedly sold out already. But that was after I signed, and they knew that I was going to be rostered, because before that they had no idea, literally just that Thursday. So on Friday they had to get everything done, got the tickets for the game Saturday. And so I went over to them, and then I actually spent the next 30 or so minutes signing autographs for kids that in just 6 months ago, I would have been in the crowd looking to get an autograph from a Union player. So it's been a crazy few months, and couldn't be happier.
Yeah, Dono. No, that's awesome. I want to echo what Dylan's saying. Like, I'm so happy for you. Obviously, I played with you. You deserve it. And you could just hear it in your story, I think, today. Even if you don't know Dono, you know he's just a hardworking guy just from just talking to him. And I know that you've got, once you've gotten this opportunity, I feel like you're going to take it. So keep taking it. Sorry. So I'm really happy for you. And I appreciate you sharing everything today. So thanks, man.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, we're going to move into our next segment now, which is our biggest winners and biggest losers of the week. So for those who don't know, we're all going to go around and say, from anything in the soccer world, any country, what our biggest winner and biggest loser of the week is for this past week. So Dylan, if you want to start us off, you can go ahead.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, soccer, obviously, it's a little slow right now. It wasn't the easiest week to have a winner and a loser. But for me, one of the clear winners has to be Australia. When we're talking about the Socceroos, we're talking about a team that a lot of people didn't believe in this World Cup cycle. Obviously, a lot of big legends like Tim Cahill coming out of there. But a lot of them have finished their time playing with the national team. And they navigated the Oceania qualification stage. It's obviously not the most competitive region for World Cup qualifying. But then they came up against Peru, a really solid Peru side, and a one-off in the winner going to the World Cup. What ensued was a pretty boring match, probably the match that Australia needed. And then a substitution for penalties, a goalkeeper substitution for penalties. And all he does is come up big, make a few saves. Australia buries their pens, and the Socceroos are in the World Cup. So for me, they got to be big winners. It's a big achievement for that country, something they'll expect of themselves. But on the outside looking in, it's a big achievement. And congrats to Australia. We'll see you in a few months.
I don't know why, but whenever I see online or on my phone or whenever someone says the term Socceroos, it just, like, I want to laugh, but also it gives me hype for some reason. So I'm glad I'll be hearing it in Qatar for maybe longer than the group stage, but at least the group stage, which is pretty cool. No, but I agree, though. I mean, I think you mentioned a little bit, but obviously Peru out of, you know, the South America is going to be a heavy favorite in that game, right? They have, I don't even know, I think they were in the semifinal of the Copa America or quarterfinal. I can't remember, but they're a quality team. They have quality players. Obviously, they're going to be the favorite, but, you know, I think, as you mentioned, Australia managed the game well. It was a boring game, which is exactly what they wanted. And, you know, they got the result in PKs, and they're in the World Cup. It's awesome. Let's go Socceroos.
Yeah. A rare successful penalty goalie sub.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
It's a ballsy move.
That's what I was going to touch on, actually. I was going to say that I've never really known what to think about subbing on either a player or goalkeeper just for penalties. But in their case, it worked out. And he was the entertainment of the whole match, honestly, jumping around, trying to distract the takers. He actually only made that one save to win it because the other miss was, I think, off the post or off target. But I wanted Australia to win. I was getting a little bit mad because he was more focused on his theatrics than actually making a quality dive and trying to save. But in the end, he made the crucial one, so that's all that mattered.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. That's funny. No, I don't know why I blanked on the I don't even know what was going on with his arms and legs in goal, but it was funny. I'll give him that. I don't know if it distracted them, but it was funny. So Dono, you want to go ahead with your winner?
Yeah. So my winner is absolutely Bayern Munich. securing Sadio Mane. You can see right here, I'm a big Liverpool fan. So losing Mane, it's going to be tough, but thankfully we have Luis Diaz to replace him. But, I mean, it doesn't often happen that the Bundesliga secures a player from a top Premier League team. Usually it's the other way around, because the Premier League is it's where you want to play for most players. But Sadio Mane is still playing at his peak. So the Bundesliga and Bayern Munich are getting a really quality player.
Yeah. And I think it was only 32 million, right?
Yeah, it was something like that. I don't actually know, because some reports are in euros, some are in pounds, and I can't keep it all straight with the conversion in my head, but I think I saw that it could rise with add-ons to 41 million euros. So, not sure exactly what that means, but
yeah.
Well, even if it hits 41, I still think that's a brilliant piece of business. I mean, he's just one of the top attacking players in the world. You see guys that good going for, you know, these days like 100, north of 100. He's still got his peak years to play. So I'm with you, Chris. That's a huge winner this week.
Yeah, and I don't know if it goes along with this. And I don't want to say Mane doesn't get his credit, because I think he does. But I feel like sometimes he lives in the limelight of Salah a little bit. And, you know, he, for me, you know, I mean, he did, not to mention, beat Salah to go to the World Cup, I believe, right? They beat Egypt and PKs.
And to win AFCON.
So, you know, bested him there. But no, I really think, like, he's going to make a massive, massive difference for Bayern. And, you know, any team would love to have him. And for that price tag, as we mentioned, I think it's an absolute steal. So.
Chris, all Liverpool fans might be getting a little nervous. A little Salah news, a little Mane on the way out. Guard's changing.
See, the thing is that I won't have Liverpool as my loser, because while it is a big win for Bayern, it's also it can't be considered a loss for Liverpool, because to lose a player who you brought in for 34 million, for 6 years he performed at the highest level, and then you're actually selling him on for a profit, and he only had 1 year left on his contract as well. So you could have lost him for free in just 12 months. Mm-hmm. So it's actually good business from both sides. I think they came to a really fair deal. And I think that everyone who supports the Reds should be wishing Mane the best. I don't want to see any of that Sadio Mane hate that I've been seeing from trolls on the internet.
For sure. Can't hate that man. I don't know who would hate him. But yeah. So lastly, for my biggest winner, again, you know, tough week, not much going on, but I'm going to go with a little rumor buzz going around and give some props to a player that I actually very much appreciate. And, you know, I don't think really gets much of the spotlight it's going to be Tammy Abraham this week. So he's been linked with United and Arsenal. Now, I don't really think he's going to leave, but he might, you know, I'm just going off the links, to kind of give him the credit. But, you know, this past season for Roma, right. He obviously had a pretty difficult time at Chelsea. you know, wasn't getting the minutes that he thought he deserved. And he openly would say that, and then comes to Roma, where he knows he's going to get the time that he deserves. And all he does is just score 17 goals or sorry, 27 goals, this season. And you know, I think he's a great goal scorer. And I think he's just an insanely hard worker. I don't remember what Chelsea player gave him the props for this. I think it might've been Mount, but I'm not really sure. They were saying that, I read this a while ago, they were saying that this guy shows up earliest to training, leaves super late, is always getting extra work, performs well at training every day. And I think that's why he was fed up with Thomas Tuchel a little bit, just because he was putting in the work, and he didn't seem like he was getting noticed. But I'm gonna give him some props here. So great season for Abraham. And, you know, he's got the rumor buzz around him, and I think it's deserved. And I think any Premier League side, if that's where he decides to go next, would love to have him.
Yeah, totally. Well deserved. well deserved. I mean, 27 goals, that speaks for itself. I mean, in a top five league in the world. I'd love to see him getting a little bit more involved in the England setup now. Obviously, I know, you know, Harry Kane is there at the nine, but just if Southgate, you know, they had a tough window. If you can somehow mix Tammy into the plans, I think he was in this Nations League squad, but he got left out of one for friendlies and that caused a ton of stir. But hey, I mean, you're always rooting for a guy that's working his butt off like Tammy Abraham. And so always happy to see him succeed.
Yeah, I think that something that definitely helped him was I feel like he's such a Jose Mourinho player. He yeah. really fits. He's a true number nine. He'll fit into that system that Jose wants to play. And while I don't necessarily like Mourinho as a manager, he's going to get him in positions to score goals. And that's what he did. So kudos to Tammy Abraham. I'm not big on getting ahead of transfer news before it actually happens, just because, again, Liverpool, if you remember the Nabil Fekir saga, nothing is confirmed until you see the player signing the contract. That's what I always say. But yeah. I hope that Tammy gets a move if that's what he wants. And if he wants to continue playing where he's had success, then that's good for him as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I kind of did it just to like give him some props because I love the guy.
Yeah.
But no, I agree with you. I agree with you. Yeah, so now for biggest losers. So, Dill, do you want to start us off?
Sure. Well, Chris, you're talking about signing contracts. One guy who's done a lot of contract signing in the past few years is Romelu Lukaku. And my biggest loser is going to have to be Chelsea. It's breaking that Lukaku is going to go back to Inter on loan for 8 to 10 mil, depending on who you hear from. But we're talking about a guy that just left Inter to come to Chelsea for 110 million euros, I believe, was the unit. All he did there, like, he's a good player. This is no Lukaku hate here, but he fell out with the coach. You know, he had some problem, apology to the fans, whatever. It didn't work out. And so now Chelsea are sending him back to Inter Milan, where he had fantastic success. It was one of the top strikers in the world. And they're losing 100 mil on it. And it's not the first time we've seen this with Chelsea. You know, they sent him away, you know, a while ago, and then he came back. And it was a big thing about, oh, I'm coming home. But it didn't really work out very well at home, apparently. And then apparently the news came out that he wanted to be at Inter the whole time. I don't know. It's very fishy. But all I know is Chelsea lost a ton of money on a world-class player, and they're my biggest loser.
Yeah, I think Chelsea, the one thing that I really hate is the Chelsea fans that I know and how they're always talking about how they're going to buy this player, they're going to buy that player. And the thing that irritates me the most is that most times they do, and they go and buy all those players because they can. But I'm glad that it didn't work out for them this time. What I didn't tell you guys earlier was when we were studying the way that we were going to play for our new coach at Drexel, we were studying the way that Inter were going to play with their 3-5-2. And for me, it was a lot of focusing on the strikers and their movement and how they would press and stuff like that. So it was a lot of watching Lautaro and Lukaku. So even though I wasn't the biggest fan of Lukaku being an Everton and Manchester United player in Chelsea in his past, I grew to be a big fan of his at Inter. And I was really disappointed to see that he was going to go to Chelsea. But I think a lot of the reason – this is just my hunch – a lot of the reason why he fell out with Thomas Tuchel is because I'm guessing – Thomas Tuchel told him that they were going to play a similar system, which would obviously entail playing with two up top. And Lukaku found the most success he's had in his career playing like that. And maybe I'm just drawing comparisons between him and me, but I'd be very disappointed if a manager told me that I was going to be playing with a strike partner, and then every time that I played, I was playing all alone up there. So maybe that's why Lukaku failed at Chelsea, and even though it's not still Antonio Conte managing at Inter. I hope he finds success there again.
That's funny, because I was literally about to draw the comparison myself, actually, but you did it yourself, which is took some blame. I also want to go back to the Chelsea fans and the players, and like, you know, we're getting this guy right now. It's like getting Koundé, Koulibaly, replacing Rudiger, Koundé, Koulibaly. That's all I hear. That's all I hear from all my Chelsea friends that are fans. So I completely agree with you on that point, which is funny, because I guess it's just a worldwide thing, I guess. And it's not just you, Dono, not just your friends. But so do you want to give your biggest loser now?
Yeah, my biggest loser is you and me and all the fans that are fans of the World Cup and soccer in general, because if the World Cup wasn't in Qatar, it'd be going on right now. And it's a little bit depressing to think about, and it is going to be unique. We'll have the most interesting club soccer season of all time with a World Cup break right in the middle of it. I'm assuming there will be at least one team in every league that drastically improves and drastically suffers from that break. It's almost inevitable that there will be switches and changes over that time, but yeah, it'll be interesting, and I'm disappointed in the lack of soccer that we have right now.
Chris, when I tell you I had the same exact loser last week on the same exact points, man, it is a travesty, and you're so right. It sucks that we don't have soccer now. And you're so right that it sucks that it's going to fall in the middle of like Boxing Day in England. I'm not going to make all the same points I made last episode, but the most congested fixture segment of the club season. And you know why it's happening. It's not for soccer, it's for money. So I'm not going to go on the same rant two episodes in a row, but Chris, I couldn't agree more.
Did you guys like know each other in a past life or something? Because I'm telling you, Chris, it sounded the exact same. It's hilarious. Like, you guys were like right on point, like right on par. Like, let's go club season. Let's go. It's so funny. No, that's funny. No, and you guys hit all the points. I don't have any more. I'm just, you know, another sad soccer fan out there, you know. But
it's a joke.
It is. No, so to wrap us up on this segment, for my biggest loser, kind of taking a little detour. We haven't really tapped into the MLS side for this segment yet. So I'm gonna go there. And my biggest loser this week is Nashville SC. So I'm gonna assume not a lot of you all have watched that game this past Sunday. But you know, I actually, this is like the third Nashville SC game that I've watched this season. I actually really enjoy watching them play. They have very like exciting attacking players with CJ Sapong and Mukhtar up top. I think Mukhtar is like one of the best players in MLS. He's very, very good. Besides Chris Donovan, but Sporting KC scores in the first half. Graham Zusi comes out and in classic Graham Zusi fashion scores a left-footed screamer cutting in. So go up 2-0. And then Nashville didn't really play well up until that point. And then they started turning it on, getting some of that attacking flair going, as I mentioned, getting Mukhtar and CJ Sapong involved. I forget who scored the first goal, but they made it 2-1.
And Loba. Then Loba.
Loba. Yeah, Loba scored the first one. And then right towards the tail end of the game, I think it might have been in stoppage time or right before stoppage time. They're kind of putting on the pressure. Sporting KC sitting back. And Muriel, their outside back, gets in the box and gets taken down. And ref calls penalty instantly, goes to VAR. And, you know, we can probably talk for hours about a debate of VAR. But so goes to VAR, and it turned out that the first man was offsides. And so PK was overturned, goal kick to Sporting KC, game over. And, you know, I think Nashville's in a unique spot. Like I said, I think they have a lot of talent. You know, I think they sit at sixth in the table right now, and that they have, I think they played one more game than everyone there around. So that would have been a big result as a tie there. And like I said, they're an exciting team. So I'd like to see them in MLS playoffs. So for this week, I think that's my biggest loser.
Yeah. And a little salt in the wounds here. I think that's their first loss at their park, which is admittedly, it's one of the best atmospheres in all of MLS. If you get a chance to catch a Nashville game on TV, I would totally recommend it. The place gets electric, and they do have a really good team. But yeah, like you said, I mean, you touched on most of the points here, Drags, but I think that first loss at home is tough. I think MLS is a league, and Dono, I'm sure you're about to see this firsthand, but we see a lot of, you know, the home team will usually get a result regardless of the standing. I see that a lot. And when I look at MLS, so you got to win your games at home, and they didn't. And sixth place, it's solid, but you probably think they're a little bit better than that. So yeah, got to get back on the horse, show some character, bounce back from a first home loss, and see what happens. But that's a good one, Jars.
Yeah, it's actually a good point. It's something that even in my short time with the first team has been talked about a lot. It's very important. You have to pick up 3 points at home because they're points are just so hard to come by on the road. You play in atmospheres. Subaru Park is a great atmosphere. I can say firsthand it was unbelievable. And then I haven't played away yet, but I know that there are a lot of away stadiums that have amazing atmospheres, Nashville being one of them. And yeah, unfortunate for Nashville, but that first loss had to come sometime. So yeah. At least they'll be able to complain about it, and the VAR decision.
That's what I was going to say, man. It's the VAR decision.
They were going to play Union at some point, so like, they were going to. It's just a matter of when, not if.
I do think we go there later this season. Hopefully, I'm on the roster.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be sick.
Well, that wraps up the biggest winners and losers. More soccer's on the horizon. I think the Prem's like 46 or 47 days away. So we're getting there. We're getting back to the club season. But next segment of this show is Spin the Wheel. Let's say you're at a game. You're sitting next to someone you don't know. We're going to spin the wheel of Europe's top five leagues. And whatever it lands on, we're going to try to find something interesting going on with that league. Something you could talk to a fan that you don't know if a game's delayed 30 minutes or whatever. So I'm going to spin it. Last time was Ligue 1. This time we are on – this should be a decent one to work with. La Liga. Does anybody have anything?
I don't know. Donna looks like he has something down there.
I mean, it's not La Liga specific, but when you mentioned 30-minute delay, it made me think Champions League final, and that was horrible.
That's where this was really born. That's where this segment was born.
Yeah, it was born in the Champions League final. That's funny. No, I was thinking, Dill, what are you gonna say?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was just gonna go with Champions League final, Real Madrid. There's always players in and out of there. So we could talk about that, but do you have something else that you wanted to mention?
No, I was gonna bring up Real Madrid. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, on that, I think first name that sticks out obviously is Rudiger.
Mm-hmm. He was announced this week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's gonna be a big signing for them. But I think Real Madrid did something super interesting this season that I haven't seen too much in the highest level of soccer. They kind of employed on their Champions League run, like they had their first 70 minutes lineup and they had their last 20 minutes lineup. And like winning or losing, Camavinga would come on, play 20 minutes in extra time if it went there. Was there anyone else? Oh, Ceballos would come on sometimes to clean up games. So I thought that was super interesting because I haven't seen that too much in professional soccer where it's like win or lose. You know, sometimes you'll see that in lower level soccer where guys will be, all right, you're going to play 30 minutes regardless, whatever. But and we're talking about Champions League, you know, quarter, semi, round of 16. And obviously Ancelotti is a mastermind because it worked and they had some insane comebacks that guys that were subbed on directly contributed to. Talking about Camavinga, I think Lucas Vasquez can be thrown into that group of players that kind of played that role. So super interesting. What do you guys
think? You're forgetting the biggest name, the one that sent the guy that sent me into a deep depression for a few days, Rodrigo.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
How could I forget that,
dude? Yes. No, I mean that, like, I can, but besides the deep depression, I'll stay away from that topic. But no, like, I completely agree. Like, it's super interesting. Like, if you talk to anyone that, you know, I think a casual fan, just like as soon as they come on, the game changes. Like, no matter what was going on, yeah. Like, I feel like especially a guy like Camavinga, and you know, I feel like I've heard some things like, oh, he's overrated. I mean, from this past season, like, dude, like this guy, like, just changes games. He dictates possession. He's a ball winner. Like, he's legit. And like,
yeah, he's also 19.
Yeah, he's 19 years old. So like, I that's a great point, though, because like, I can't recall another team that or a manager that employed that kind of tactic and to such a, obviously led them to a Champions League final or title. And you know, it's just a great point.
Yeah, I think we're missing one big piece, and they're also going to be adding Tchouaméni to their midfield. So they'll have the future of France in their midfield with Camavinga and Tchouaméni. I'm assuming long-term replacement for Casemiro or Cruz, pick or Modric, all three of them getting up there in age. So, yeah. I mean, they have their blueprint for the future. And I'm not a Real Madrid fan, and I'm not a Barcelona fan either. But if I had to pick one, I'd be picking Barcelona any day of the week. And unfortunately, I think that La Liga is going to be dominated by Real Madrid for the foreseeable future, especially just due to Barcelona's financial problems and the fact that they just keep making even more bad decisions on top of the situation that they're already in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think another interesting little tidbit on the topic of Real Madrid, Kylian Mbappe is a guy we've mentioned a ton on this podcast over the past few episodes. And Florentino Perez, the president of Madrid, so Mbappe was linked with Madrid, and he comes out and he says, well, we don't want him anymore. We wanted the guy that wanted to come here. We don't want the guy that doesn't want to come here. Thought that was pretty interesting. Florentino's pretty outspoken, but
no, because, like, I mean, you're talking about, like, Donna was talking about the blueprint. Like, I mean, anyone would, I think any fan of any team would die to see Mbappe on their team. But I think it speaks to Real Madrid's culture and just history and everything. I think that's something that Florentino Perez was, like, kind of bringing forth with those comments. You know, they, like, Real Madrid considers themselves the biggest club in the world, most successful, things of that nature. And I mean, obviously that's from Real Madrid's perspective, but you got to give respect where it's due. They are one of the biggest clubs. And they, being in that position, they can do that. Like, they have the future. They have Vinny Jr., Rodrigo, two exciting young prospects. Like, obviously they would want Mbappe as well, but you know, I feel like that speaks to it a little bit in your point. And so that's just another interesting thing on that topic. So, yeah.
I think the scientific term for the way that Florentino Perez feels is butthurt. I think that's exactly what it is. I think he wanted Mbappe, and then when Mbappe turned him down, he starts bad-mouthing him. And I think it's a little bit soft from Florentino Perez not to respect his decision. But if I were Mbappe, I probably would have wanted to prove myself in a league other than Ligue 1. So maybe Florentino Perez has a point, but Mbappe picked the paycheck. So maybe you can't hate him for that either.
Yeah, yeah. I think you got it perfectly right, Chris, from both sides of the table. I think Florentino's a little butthurt, and I think Mbappe maybe lacking that killer ambition at this stage of his career, but he's still pretty young. He's a World Cup winner. He's going to be challenging for Champions Leagues and league titles in the future. So I guess you can't go wrong with that, can you? Well, that wraps up episode 4, today's episode. That's officially 1 month of Around the World. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Chris, huge thank you to you for coming on today and chatting with us. Super awesome conversation. And also huge congratulations to you and your family on your MLS contract and debut. Incredibly well-deserved. We played Chris, I think, 2 years ago, and you can see why he's an MLS player now. He's a quality player, quality guy. And so just huge thanks for coming on today. Chris, for all our listeners, be sure to hit the subscribe button on our show and download this episode. Be sure to follow us on Instagram for updates about our show and upcoming episodes, as well as a Twitter that will be coming soon. And don't feel afraid to engage with us. We'd love to hear from you guys. We've gotten a little feedback. Hit us up on Instagram. Hit us up on Twitter when that comes. And we'd love to hear what you guys have to say about everything going on in the soccer world. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. And we can't wait to catch you next week on Around the World.